This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 29th of January 2021. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I am your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I am accompanied in the studio by your reader, Nick Kearns. Sheila Shepherd and Sonia Phillips have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with our usual notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please try plugging your Sovereign player in and recharging it before returning it as faulty, and before you telephone Liz Legrease on 01962 861 229, and Liz's number again is 01962 861 229. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. And now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Dealer blasts his supplier to death. Debenhams finally succumbs to closure. And large vaccine centre opens. And the first headline story, Nick, please.
Yes, dealer blasts his supplier to death. A drug dealer murdered his supplier by shooting him dead in a rural lay-by after tensions rose following a robbery of his safe house, a court heard. The body of Gurinderjit Rai was found in a Ford Fiesta in a countryside lane in Corhampton, near Bishop's Waltham, by two horse riders on July the 13th, 2019. Dealer Aston Hannis, 29, of Eastleigh, is on trial at Winchester Crown Court, accused of the murder of the 41-year-old, originally from Eastleigh, but more recently based in Cheshire. Andrew Langdon, QC, prosecuting, told the jury that the fatal shot that killed Mr. Rye, known as G, is believed to have been fired from a Mercedes A-class saloon containing Hannis and co-defendant Charlie Statham, 30, of Winchester. The pair are believed to have then dumped the car in a field where it was set alight, and they were picked up by Paul White, 27, of Winchester, and taken to the home of Philip Hoden, 43, in nearby Oslebury. The weapon, a sawn-off Beretta 12-bore shotgun, was supplied by 41-year-old Corin Barlow from Hawley, Surrey, the prosecutor said. Mr. Langdon explained that Hannis was a drug dealer who supplied cocaine and cannabis to the Winchester area, with evidence suggesting he sold drugs worth £240,000 in a six-week period. He said that Mr. Rye had been Hannis' supplier, but tensions had risen after a safe house where Hannis kept his drugs was raided. He added that Hannes also had a large outstanding debt to Mr. Rye. Mr. Langdon said whether Mr. Harris thought that G, Mr. Rye, had some hand in the robbery, or whether he thought one way of ridding himself of his large debt to Mr. Rye was to shoot him, or whether he simply wanted to rob Mr. Rye of the money, he was unlikely to have in his possession that night, or a mixture of some or all of those things. The precise limit of the motivation will be difficult to define with precision. Mr. Langdon added, but whatever their motivation, one thing the prosecution say you will have no doubt is that Aston Hannes, Charlie Statham, Paul White and Corin Barlow, the man who supplied the gun, were the people who effected his killing. They were, in law, jointly responsible, each of them parties to a joint enterprise which resulted in the murder of Mr. Rye. Charged with murder are Hannes of Lear Gardens, Eastleigh, Statham of Crescent Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester, White of Dyson Drive, Abbots Barton, and Barlow of Lumley Road, Hawley, Surrey, while Barlow is also charged with possession of a firearm with intent to enable Hannes to endanger life. Hoden of Longwood Dean Lane, Oslebury, is accused of being involved with an organised crime group involved in supplying Class A drugs and murder. The defendants deny the charges and the trial continues.
Debenhams finally succumbs to closure. Any lingering hopes that the Debenhams store in Winchester may be saved from permanent closure have been dashed. Online retailer Boohoo has paid £55 million to acquire the Debenhams brand name and its website, but none of the stores, in a deal announced on Monday. As well as the 100 jobs at Winchester High Street branch, the news affects the store's other branches in Fareham and Portsmouth. The Southampton store permanently closed in the first lockdown last year. The closure sees the end of the city's largest store. Councillor Paula Ferguson, portfolio holder for local economy, said, "Obviously, we're really disappointed to see the Winchester Debenhams close, particularly as this means over 100 people will lose their jobs. But as this has been on the cards for some time, we're already in contact with the landlords to understand their plans for the future." The building is owned by Surrey County Council, which paid £15.8 million for it in 2017. Paul Spencer, Executive Director at Winchester BID, said, "This is very sad news indeed, that all the High Street Debenhams stores in the UK will close, and our thoughts are with the local team here in Winchester, which will be affected by this announcement." The administrators of Debenhams, FRP Advisory, confirmed that Boohoo Group has signed an agreement to buy the Debenhams brand and other business assets, including all the in-house brands and websites, which will take full effect following the completion of the current stock liquidation programme, which is continuing online. Debenhams High Street store is currently closed, and it is to reopen only to sell its remaining stock. FRP said in a statement, "A thorough and robust process has been undertaken by the administrators to achieve the best outcome for Debenhams stakeholders. This transaction will allow a new Debenhams branded business to emerge under strong new ownership, including an online operation and the opportunity to secure an international franchise network that will operate under licence using the Debenhams name. Once stores are able to reopen and the stock liquidation can continue in stores, the website will be operated by Boohoo."
Large vaccine centre opens. A new coronavirus vaccination centre has opened its doors to the general public. The centre in Millbrook is Hampshire and Isle of Wight's first large-scale COVID-19 vaccination centre, which means more people in the county, including Winchester District, will be able to receive their vaccination. The centre, which complements vaccination provisions at GP-led and hospital services within the region, is run by Solent NHS Trust. It was operational from the beginning of January, vaccinating community health staff from across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. John Sansom, 76, from Southampton, was the first member of the public to receive their COVID-19 vaccine at the new centre today. John said, "It was very simple and easy to have the vaccine. I didn't even feel it. The vaccine is the way out of this hole we are in. If people are hesitant about having the vaccine, please think twice." Initially, people aged 70 or over and clinically extremely vulnerable people who live within 30 to 45 minutes of a vaccination centre and haven't already been vaccinated by their local GP-led vaccination services or hospital hub have been invited to receive their vaccine at the centre. People do not need to contact the NHS as they will be invited to take up the vaccine when it is their turn. The centres operate appointment only and people will not get vaccinated by just turning up. For most people, they will receive a letter either from their GP or the national booking system, which will include all the information they need. Dr. Dan Baylis, Chief Medical Officer at Solent NHS Trust, said, "The opening of the centre in Millbrook to the public, which is just one of the four public vaccination centres we will be running across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, is another step towards coming out of the pandemic. Staff at the centre are capable of delivering thousands of life-saving jabs each week. I'm really proud to be part of an NHS community full of people working really hard to offer vaccines at the same time as providing care for vital services." This week, a 97-year-old man from Hebborne Worthy near Winchester was due to receive his jab. The man, who does not want to be named, is classed as extremely vulnerable to COVID-19 and housebound, and he has daily help going to his home from outside. Yet he hadn't heard about the jab, prompting concerns that he had been forgotten. But his son told the Chronicle that his father was told on Monday that he would receive the vaccination today. And that was yesterday for us, Thursday. And that article is accompanied by a picture of John Sampson in Southampton being advised by a nurse with what looks like a doctor stood behind, getting his first vaccination.
Thank you, Nick. That concludes the headline stories. Just before we move on, I will just let you know that there is construction work going on, roadworks going on outside the building here. So if you hear any rumbling or machinery noise, I do apologise, but there's nothing we could actually do about it just now. Right. Well, we'll carry on with the death notices and then Nick will follow that with Christian comment. Death notices. Benham, Colin, passed away peacefully on the 9th of January 2021 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Biddle, David Patrick, passed away in his sleep peacefully at home on the 7th of January 2021, age 68. Bowley, Daphne Hilda, Nesofa, passed away peacefully on January the 10th, 2021, aged 85, with her devoted and loving husband Buster by her side. Brambley, Gerald William, Jed. Sadly passed away 19th of January 2021 at Basingstoke Hospital. Conduct, Irene Doris, late of Preston Candover, sadly passed away on the 23rd of January 2021, aged 70 years. Anne Craig, MBE, died peacefully on the 16th of January 2021. Edwards, Charmaine, passed away peacefully on Tuesday the 12th of January 2021, aged 74 years. Hornsey, Sue of Winchester, passed away at Winchester Hospital on the 17th of January 2021, aged 69, after a short illness. Ludbrook, Evelyn, died peacefully on the 16th of January. McIntosh, Ian, peacefully at home on Friday the 22nd of January 2021, aged 80 years. McEwen, Joan Eileen, sadly passed away on the 12th of January, aged 91 years. Moore, John Michael, past chaplain to St John's Winchester, peacefully on the 12th of January 2021 at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Shrimpton, Beryl, passed away peacefully on the 20th of January 2021 at St Cross Care Home, aged 97 years. Reverend Philip Crinks, priest in charge of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester, is the contributor of this week's Christian comment. It is headed, Icon or Idol? Thank you, Nick.
We tend to view our material possessions in one of two ways. Mostly, we see them as rather ordinary and of no spiritual significance. At other times, they become idols for us, which we almost worship. Both of these are mistakes. Are there material things which have become idols to you? It is usually easy to tell. Has your priority become getting those things, keeping them, or getting more of them? Have they become more important to you than right relationships with God and neighbours, family and loved ones? Are you taking shortcuts or making sacrifices for them? We all have at least one kind of material thing which risks becoming an idol for us. Perhaps it's the decoration of our home. Perhaps it's our car. Perhaps it's one of our technology devices or gadgets. Perhaps it's our clothes. The mistake we're making when this happens is a loss of perspective. We have confused something which is part of the world God has created with God himself. The Creator, whose hand we see in the goodness of his creation, demands our worship, and the way that no created thing does. But it's also a mistake to think that material things we have are just ordinary, that we do with them is of no spiritual significance. The Epiphany readings remind us that there is nothing so ordinary that God cannot make it extraordinary. The waters of the Jordan become living waters of baptism. Nazareth becomes not the place out of which nothing good can come, but the place where God in Christ makes his home. The water at Cana becomes the finest wine. A fisherman becomes, when called by Jesus, an inspiring teacher of God's ways. Ordinary things can become extraordinary by becoming part of God's story of gratitude, generosity, and grace. In that way, they always had the potential to become extraordinary. Rather than thinking of material things as insignificant or idolising them, it is better to think of them as potential icons. An icon is a set of material things which have been shaped prayerfully so that they show a glimpse of God's glory. Our money, although it mustn't be an idol, can be an icon. When the wise men arrived at Bethlehem, they opened their treasure chests and offered their treasures as gifts to Jesus. So their material riches of gold, frankincense and myrrh became signs of the coming of God's kingdom. Each one of us has the power to design our financial arrangements, what we spend, what we save, what we give away, to reflect true priorities. If we do that, we won't make our money an idol, nor will we treat it as something insignificant. Instead, our personal and household finances will become an icon. They will show us and those around us a glimpse of God's glory and a sign of his kingdom. One theologian quipped that our checkbooks can give us a clearer vision of heaven than our hymn books, and also a clearer vision of hell. It is not an easy time financially for many, but it is always a good time to take stock of what God has given us, to be thankful for it, and to use it with thoughtfulness and generosity.
There's quite a mixed range of letters to the editor this week, and we've selected some of the best for you. I'll start us off with Royal Down. Sir, Royal Down is not a garden village, but a greenwashed mega-development. Locally, we call it Spoilt Down. It is 5,000 houses. Barton Farm is only 2,000, which would destroy beautiful historic downland, overwhelm surrounding communities, and substantially affect the health of the people who live in those communities. The Sunday Times put Winchester on the naughty step over Silver Hill. Station Approach has not been covered in glory either. Winchester deserves world-leading planning. To do that, we must start with an inspiring vision, not with the SHLAA. We, the ordinary citizens who live here, must insist our public servants, both councillors and officers, stop squabbling and lead. Winchester could easily be the best place to live in Britain. It won't be while councillors expend their energy on saying it is the other side's fault. Chronicle, January 21st. And officers spend theirs writing 104-page briefings which discombobulate the councillors and do nothing to make a complex set of issues more widely understood. On February the 15th, the WCC consultation begins. I implore readers to get involved. Locals are also organising opposition under the Save South Winchester banner and have a Facebook group that is easy to join. Evil, or just bad, only needs good people to do nothing. And that was from Louise Hedges of Main Road, Hursley.
And Veronica Bliss writes, Sir, Roger Malin is entitled to support Royal Down, but I note he lives in Teg Down, the other side of Winchester from the proposed development. That's in the Chronicle letters, January the 14th. The Hursley area covers three distinct villages of Hursley, Compton and Shawford, and Oliver's Battery, and will affect thousands of local residents who use the whole area for recreation on a daily basis. We all use the footpaths and bridleways that cross the shallow valley between two ridges. And I can assure you that due to the size of the proposed development, it would certainly not be invisible. The extra traffic to and from the development will snarl up our local roads, which are heavily congested at the best of times, and particularly when there is a problem on the M3 or the M27. And there are many other reasons why many of us are objecting. And as I say, that's from Veronica Bliss from Compton.
And staying on planning, save Bushfield from development, writes Simon Lever. Sir, when friends visit Winchester, they are amazed that our treasured city is surrounded by hills, rivers and woodland. Bushfield Camp is an ancient chalk landscape of rolling hills. When taking friends on walks over Whiteshute Ridge and Bushfield Camp beyond, they are stunned by its beauty, the avenue of trees welcoming walkers to gaze in awe at the surrounding scenery. Chronicle, January the 21st. Should this cherished downland on the edge of Winchester be encroached upon for any reason, its unique historical significance can never be replaced. I applaud Beau Priestley and Kim Wilkie for their passion in campaigning to secure a status of local plan or local green space in perpetuity to protect this much-loved downland. Winchester is one of the most desirable places to live in Britain. We cannot afford to relinquish such a unique and historic landscape, not just for the present, but future generations. And that's from Simon Lever of Juniper Close Badger Farm. And there's a very gentle, it almost looks like a watercolour photograph of one of the old army roads, which is now rather looking very threadbare and worn, and looking forwards over the hillside, the green hillside. Very pretty.
And further comment on planning strategy from Caroline Horrell, entitled Housing Sites. Sir, do residents of the Winchester district know about the Partnership for South Hampshire? The Liberal Democrat administration has recently agreed to the development of a joint strategy with the partnership that will propose the scale and location of development needs of the Solent area as part of our new local plan. The partnership includes Eastleigh, Fareham, Gosport, Havant, New Forest, Portsmouth and Southampton councils and parts of East Hampshire, Test Valley and Winchester. The reason this is important is that in the partnership area there is a net gap in housing supply of circa 11,000 homes. Winchester is the only authority in the partnership significantly over-delivering against its supply of housing in the plan period. And therefore, it is likely we will be asked to over-deliver homes in our area to support other authorities. Is that why the administration is not prepared to take sites like Royal Down and Mitchell Devastation off the table? Why are we allowing the Partnership for South Hampshire to drive the discussion around potential strategic development opportunity areas? In forming this strategy, there is no dialogue with our residents because there is no requirement on the partnership to formally consult the public. Where is the engagement with the parish and town councils in this discussion? Or are we about to exclude our residents from the important and plan-shaping decisions once more? We are told if the joint strategy is to be adopted, the administration will come back to us. I hope this will be the case, but in the meantime, beware the Trojan horse. And as I say, that's from Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group, Winchester City Council, Sparsholt.
And yet more on, planning. Mrs. P. Dollery writes about civic attitude. Sir, I refer to the erection of two buildings in Winall Flats. They are to be five stories high. The City Council has set out leaflets asking for our views, but completely ignore our concerns. They seem to think that cutting down several beautiful trees in the most polluted area of Winnall is of no concern to them. And where are they going to put at least 50 cars from the car park, which is to be obsolete because of the new buildings? It seems they have to reach their goal of the amount of buildings to be erected by the government so they can be awarded without a care for the environment and the concerns of people who are dead against the scheme. The council has no concern for people living in the area. Their health and safety mean nothing to them, and people in authority are ignoring all the concerns, and whatever they want, they will do. The country is looking to plant more trees because of global warming, but this council are oblivious of that fact. And that's from Mrs. P. Dollery, Winnall Manor Road, Winnall, Winchester.
The storm to come. Sir, tucked away at the back of the Hampshire Chronicle last week are the prescient words of Andy Lester, The Storm Ahead, warning of the threats to our environment and way of life if we do not take strong action soon to slow down global warming. He says, do not underestimate the speed at which change is now going to occur. I would like to thank Mr. Lester for being constant in reminding us of this looming catastrophe. I believe that we have the solutions already, and we have amazing talent in Hampshire to contribute to changing our society. However, we need a strong framework within which governments can enable change. That is why I urge everyone, if they have not already, to support the Climate and Ecological Emergency, CEE, bill that is making its way as a private member's bill through Parliament now, with almost 90 MPs supporting it already. This bill links carbon reduction and biodiversity, so that the reduction of one enhances the protection of the other. It requires that all sources of carbon are included in our accounting and to ensure equity and democracy. It requires a citizens' assembly to be set up to inform government of how we make the changes required to ensure no one is left vulnerable, as they have been during this pandemic. Those who had warned of pandemics were ignored, and we were left wanting when it arrived. And climate change has been talked about for decades, and still emissions are rising. This year, the UK is leading COP26. Therefore, let's show that governments are prepared to act as if we are in an emergency and take on this heavy responsibility by adopting the CEE bill. And that letter's from Leslie McKinnon, Downs Road, South Wanston.
Tony Bundy of the Labour and Cooperative Party writes about police behaviour. Sir, I write as the Labour and Cooperative candidate for our Police and Commissioner in response to Michael Campbell, MBE's letter in the Chronicle of January the 21st. I did indeed share his disgust at the reports of the behaviour of a group of dismissed Hampshire police officers. I unreservedly support the Chief Constable in pursuing this action. As the hearings occurred over several days and involved barristers on both sides, this represented a significant investment in time and financial resources. It was clearly seen as an important priority. I am greatly reassured by that. I have had experience working with the police for over 40 years. I do not think that these attitudes are as widespread as they once were, but this case shows that they remain too prevalent and can continue out of sight. There is a continued need for vigilance, and we must ensure that all processes, government recruitment, training, appraisal, promotion and audit are as robust as they can be and ensure one can be in any doubt that behaviour of this sort will be decisively confronted. The current recruitment being undertaken also provides a significant opportunity to ensure the workforce more closely resembles the communities it serves. This will not solve these problems, but it is part of the answer. As a manager and inspector of health, social care and the criminal justice system, I put the highest importance on these issues, often taking a lead amongst other managers. I sought to embed a true culture of anti-discrimination, equality and decency into all parts of services I managed. I give an absolute assurance that I will continue this if elected as your police and crime commissioner. It will remain an absolute priority and part of my police and crime plan. I do disagree with one aspect of Mr. Campbell's letter. I believe this chief constable has shown that she will not need her feet putting in the fire. She has shown that tackling this behaviour is a priority, and I would be pleased to give my support as the Police and Crime Commissioner. And that's from Tony Bundy, Labour and Cooperative Party candidate for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police and Crime Commissioner.
Moving on to health and fitness now, and the next letter is entitled Best Gym. Sir, I would like to say a heartfelt thank you to the staff at New Energy Fitness in Middlebrook Street, Winchester. Although the centre is closed, they have gone overboard to support members. The on-demand service, where members can access online exercise, yoga, moving stretch and much more, is superb. During a time where lockdown can cause a lot of essential exercise and mental health issues, services like this are a lifeline. Not only do the trainers spend time preparing and filming fitness programmes, I personally have found great support, especially from Debs Wilkes, who has telephoned and FaceTimed myself to encourage me, both physically and emotionally. I have been to a number of gyms and fitness venues over the years, and New Energy has been the very best. So, as we say thank you to key workers, etc., I feel we should say a huge well done and a huge thank you for making such a huge effort to keep us fit and healthy in so many ways. And that letter's from Anne Jones, Thelma Drive, Kingsworthy.
And Mike Bridge is an ambassador for the hospice and has sent a letter entitled Hospice Appeal. Sir, the Winchester Hospice fundraising team has lined up an excellent online event for Friday, February the 5th, starting at 7 p.m. The event will be an engaging and entertainment evening with music, Valentine cocktail and breakfast making sessions that will sit alongside the chance to bid on over 30 brilliant auction lots. The event is being hosted by CBS TV and radio presenter Liam Mayclem. Liam, originally from Hampshire, has family that live in Winchester. We are so close to raising the total required to open the hospice doors in the summer, and we know that with the wonderful support of the Winchester community, this is now within reach. For more details of the event and how to participate, see www.charityauction.bid/love. And that's from Mike Bridge, Ambassador, Winchester Hospice Appeal of Park Road, Winchester.
And Michael Kitley has some city memories. Reading Margaret Grant's letter, chronicled January the 14th, about Barlow's Butchers in Stockbridge Road also brought back memories to me, as my father, Fred Kitley, was also a butcher there back in the 1950s. Bill Sankey was manager at the time. Dad had a reputation of making the best sausages in town. I would spend time there, fascinated as a 10-year-old, watching him make them and could not wait to get them home to eat. There were quite a few butchers in town and at that time, and Dad worked for most of them at one time or another. Can people remember Mayo Butchers near Chesil Bridge, Stratford, High Street, McFisheries, Evans in Alsford, the Pie Factory, Winnell? Like Margaret, a walk down memory lane. And that walk is from Michael Kitley, Froman Road, Week, Winchester.
And Phil Gagg writes about the Ringo charge. Sir Peter Innes, Chronicle Letters, January the 21st, is right not to want to use Gladstone Street car park. It does seem that the surcharge was a mistake, and I hope he has raised it with the City Council Parking Service. However, it is difficult to see why he was parking in Gladstone Street anyway. If he came to Winchester from Headbourne Worthy, he could easily have used Worthy Lane car park and saved 70p. As a further bonus, he would have avoided adding to the congestion at the Albion Crossroads and making pollution worse on Sussex Street. He would have taken less time, used less fuel, and gained a healthy short walk. Even better, next time he might even be able to use the Spring bus. Direct and excellent value, especially if he has a bus pass. He seems very aggrieved about the 40 pence Ringo surcharge, so he will no doubt consider far better ways of saving his money while at the same time reducing his contribution to global heating. And that is from Phil Gagg of St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And Martin Todd gives us a council perspective on Ringo charges. There is no requirement to pay anything extra to park in any of the City Council's car parks using the Ringo mobile app. And since the previously compulsory 30p convenience charge was scrapped, thousands of people don't. Chronicle Letters, January the 21st. In December, for example, people paying to park with Ringo parked without any extra charge more than 14,000 times. The only situation where someone might find themselves paying extra is if they choose to receive the chargeable text message reminders. But there is no requirement to do this. If someone opts out of the reminders, the app keeps them opted out. The Ringo app provides a useful countdown timer for parking time free of charge as well. And that's from Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member, Service Quality and Transformation, Winchester City Council.
And John Airy writes about NHS commitment. He says, "Sir, one can only be humbled by the strength, bravery and professionalism of those on the front line during this pandemic, and I have personally seen firsthand the unwavering commitment of staff at the RHCH and several care homes. I would also like to thank Ian MacDonald and his excellent staff who continue to keep the Grange St Cross COVID-free while continuing to care for the residents and their relatives. Thank you so much." And that's from John Airy of Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy.
And our last letter is entitled Excellent Care from J.R. Vittoria. "I have recently received excellent treatment in the RHCH and wish to express my grateful thanks to Mr. A. Miles, Consultant Colorectal Surgeon, Ms. Frances Goulder, Super Surgeon, and all the nursing staff in the treatment centre for their care, hard work and kindness. They all contributed to my swift recovery and stay much shorter due to their diligence and dedication. I thank them all. We are so fortunate to have such wonderful nursing staff and hospital in our city. And that was J.R. Vittoria, Stony Lane Week.
Well, that's all the letters for this week. Now we'll carry on and Nick will read us what Tom Bromley has to say about the threat to our snowmen.
Last time I wrote a column about snow, the following day, Sergei Skripal was poisoned. So a quick heads up there to any double agents who might be reading. At least this time, lockdown should be stopping any Russian tourists coming over to admire Salisbury Cathedral's world-famous spire. In the midst of all the January gloom, Sunday's snow was a rare moment of escapism. My daughters are still young enough to get excited enough to wake me with the news that snow has arrived. Crunching across to nearby Hudson's Field, there were families everywhere enjoying an impromptu spot of sledging and snowman building. Suddenly, it wasn't 2021 anymore, but a timeless moment from one of those previous winters before anyone could place Wuhan on a map. But as the snow and ice started to disappear, it wasn't the only ice melting away this week. On Monday, a report in the cryosphere revealed that global ice is now accelerating at a record rate, with the loss of the Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets now in line with the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change's worst-case scenarios. Between 1994 and 2017, a total of 28 trillion tonnes of ice has been lost. Two-thirds of this ice loss is down to the warming of the atmosphere and one-third down to the warming of the oceans. As I've said in previous columns, if it wasn't for coronavirus, then the issue of the environment would be front and centre of a lot of news coverage right now. Even with coronavirus and the 7% drop in fossil fuel burning due to lockdowns worldwide, 2020 still ended up being the joint warmest year of all time. The world's oceans, meanwhile, were at their hottest level since records began. Overall, the year was 1.25 degrees centigrade higher than the pre-industrial average, nudging the planet ever closer to the crucial 1.5 degrees centigrade target, beyond which the effects of climate change will accelerate still further. The one good bit of early 2021 news in all of this was Joe Biden's inauguration as US president. Already he has re-signed America to the 2015 Paris Agreement and cancelled the Keystone XL oil and gas pipeline. But even the Paris Agreement is no more than a sticking plaster in what is needed. This autumn's COP15 biodiversity conference in Kunming and COP26 conference in Glasgow are seen on all sides as being crucial in finding a way to tackle climate change and stop these relentless rises in temperature. That's going to need governments to come together. It will also most likely need all of us to change our lifestyles. If not, snow days like last Sunday will soon become nothing more than a memory of times past. And this article's accompanied by a couple of pictures, a nice large one of two lovely giant snowmen on Sunday with their hats on and their big smiley faces, and a windswept little insert picture of someone heading to the top of the hill with a snowboard.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Right, we'll continue with Chronicle comment. First person, letter from Westminster and Balgarham now. The editor heads up his article this week with The Sad Demise of Debenhams. Any chance of a last-minute reprieve for Debenhams has been dashed with the news on Monday that Boohoo has purchased its brand name and website, but none of its high street stores. It means the end of the Winchester branch and the end of the department store trading on that site for over 100 years, stretching back to the era of Sheriff and Ward, unless another department store takes it on, which would appear extremely unlikely. This is obviously bad news for Winchester, not least because 100 people have lost their jobs, but it may create opportunities for new uses, and the City Council has been talking to the owners, Surrey County Council, which bought the building in 2017, when such properties were considered a sound investment. Many people will have ideas for the future use of the large building, and the Chronicle would like to hear them. The key stumbling block for innovative ideas will be the landlord's understandable desire to maximise their income stream. Perhaps in these uncertain times, they can be a bit more imaginative and flexible. Time will tell. Now, Joanna Lewis writes about sorting our priorities in first person. Nick will tell us more.
I'm a resilient person normally, but this time I'm finding lockdown really hard mentally. How many of us are hearing this from others, and also feeling it ourselves, perhaps? Third time in isolation seems to be surprisingly challenging. I've noticed some behaviour changes and out-of-character responses in myself. Listening to the latest live government TV broadcast last week, I suddenly found myself strangely attracted to Sir Patrick Vallance. The government's stoic chief scientific and engineering advisor was explaining the differential death rate per thousand in old COVID as opposed to new COVID, which is being called South Africa Corona, although we weren't allowed to call the first one China COVID. Sir Patrick is a model of calm, poise and comforting belief in the power of research and scientific data. He seems unchanged and unflappable since the start. This is super attractive, considering where we find ourselves currently. Maybe I'm not alone. Maybe there's a secret Chris Whitty fan club out there. At the very least, this could be symbolic of a new age in the veneration of scientists. It certainly should. On the subject, I hope all our vaccine heroes will be officially honoured. From the laboratory geniuses to the volunteering church hall jabbers. It would do a lot to restore faith in a process that gives out a knighthood to arrogant multi-millionaire racing drivers who don't pay UK taxes, that could support the NHS. I find my concentration wavering too. Watching another Prime Minister TV briefing in which our leader was pronouncing on some belated decision about a ban on UK arrivals, I suddenly thought, isn't that carpet awful? That blue swirly thing in front of the three socially distanced lecterns. What anyone said afterwards will remain a mystery, as I was giving the whole room a makeover. This was on the grounds that the space we have had to look at for nearly a year resembles a budget hotel reception area from an episode of Howard's Way. I am getting so much news fatigue and feeling overexposed to bad news headlines, I've switched to local news. The BBC will have to dispatch Ola Gurin or Fergal Keane. When they turn up, you know it's serious. Also, I did slightly alarm myself last week. Self-isolating and working on the same project for 7 days in a row, I thought to myself, what shall I do for a change? So I sat at the other end of the sofa. The way that I actually thought, ooh, this is nice, I must do it more often, worried me. We used to say that if we popped over to the Isle of Wight or Barcelona for the weekend. But let's not panic. A new appreciation of home could be positive. To be satisfied with what we have around us, taking more pleasure in the everyday and experiences that are free, could all be for the greater good. Seriously though, what is alarming are the signs of the mental strain on our healthcare workers. It's been upsetting seeing TV reports from intensive care units with nurses, doctors and consultants in tears. This is new. These are trained professionals we associate with unflinching coping mechanisms. But they are now in situations resembling field hospitals in a conflict zone, totally overrun by the cruel effects of a battle that has no end in sight. Ensuring they have mental health support, proper salary increases and generous leave are rewards we must push for. Plus, keep staying at home for now. I worry greatly about our students. One said to me last week in despair, having had most of her second and third year university experience disrupted, I can't remember a time before COVID now. We must prioritise supporting the mental health of the young, helping them imagine how much better life will be when this is over. And it will be.
Now, a letter from Westminster. The Winchester MP Steve Bryan has a few words for us this week. He writes, "This week has been an extremely busy one, as I've been working with colleagues across Parliament to push the urgent case for our schools to fully reopen. My central thesis is that we're seeing a tipping point right now among parents who see the super fast vaccine rollout at the same time as they see their own children schooled in front of a computer day after day with little hope that that is going to end before, now we hear, Easter. The argument I am setting out is that once we've vaccinated the top four most vulnerable groups and given it a few weeks for that to take effect, you've reduced the risk of mortality from COVID by almost 90% and the risk of hospitalisation by more than 50%. So you need to start bringing our economy and our society back to life. And the first piece of that jigsaw is our schools, which the government rightly says is its priority. What I am asking for is ministers to set out a plan to bring some clarity to the situation. And I know teachers, parents, children and school leaders would like that as well. So yes, we've set a date at the start of March, which is regrettably not right after half term as it should have been, that's tied to the first four groups being vaccinated. That is not an arbitrary timetable, because surely it should be linked to key milestones around the rollout of the vaccine. We're asking for a plan based on the government's own milestones, so, as I said in the House of Commons earlier this month, we can give people some hope. And I'm not glibly saying teachers should get back to the classroom regardless of risk. I have already expressed in Parliament my belief that teachers, early years workers and school staff should be vaccinated at the start of the next phase of the programme. That is not an easy argument to make, but if schools really are our priority, we need to put our jabs where it counts once we've protected the most vulnerable groups. Anne Longfield, England's excellent children's commissioner, has spoken about the way many vulnerable children slip out of sight during lockdown. And she's right, of course. But all our children are suffering at this time. Just because you can provide a big kitchen table and a modern laptop doesn't mean your children's mental health and educational prospects are not being negatively affected. Our Prime Minister said last year that keeping schools closed a moment longer than is absolutely necessary was socially intolerable, economically unsustainable, and morally indefensible. I could not put it better myself. Turning to that super-fast vaccine rollout, and it was quite moving to spend a morning at our Badger Farm Centre last week as a volunteer. It was a chance to see firsthand how it's going and feed back to ministers from the front line. Paramount among them was, of course, supply, which we keep hearing is the rate-limiting factor to doing even more vaccinations. I am liaising with ministers every day to understand this and push for clarity around future supply lines, because we're set up here to jab for victory, and it's heartbreaking to see it not yet fulfilling its potential. And we have two little arty pieces from Belgarum this week. Nick, please.
Yes, an alternative look at the news. The first one is titled Conceptual Modern Art? No, Workman Screams. Belgarum was taken by some white panels that appeared recently at Winchester Guildhall. Measuring about 10 feet square, they are rather striking amid the gloomy grey of a January day. If Belgarum did not know better, one might think they are artistic statements, perhaps about the clean slate for the city council as they seek to redevelop the area across the road, the central Winchester regeneration, Silver Hill, Saxon Gate, etc. Indeed not. They are to do with the revamping of the former 1871 cafe. A council spokesman said, "The temporary covers allow contractors to keep the site secure whilst they remove the doors from the inside." And that article is accompanied by two quite large photographs of the two plain white 10-foot square boards that have been put up over the doorways to the old cafe. And so, the second article is titled Subtle Art at New Uni Building. And this is also accompanied by a couple of photographs. Belgarum has been sent these photos of a statue outside the new building at Winchester University. They were taken by Anne Doughty, who said, "At a distance in the snow, what you see are two black rubbish bags piled on top of each other. Get a bit closer and it's a bronze statue of a cloaked man begging outside the new university building. Closer still, when you bend over to look at his face, you get the feeling you're looking at Christ himself and you can feel the warmth that comes from him." This is an amazing sculpture. Maybe it's there to remind us we all need to be there for each other in a time of need. Somehow the face draws you in. Also, the hands seem to have markings which could be likened to stigmata. So I wonder if this is a subtle way of the university asking Christ to look out for everyone in it. From a distance, this statue may seem like a pile of rubbish, but serves as a reminder that some things are not always what they first seem. And the two little pictures are indeed of a statue of a cloaked figure sat on the ground.
Thank you, Nick. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday, 30th of January, the sun will set at 4:52 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 3rd of January... Sorry, I beg your pardon. Wednesday, the 3rd of February, the sun will rise at 7:38 a.m. and will set at 5:00 p.m. on the dot. Now on to items of general news. Nick, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. Thunder snow hits the county. Winchester awoke to the first snowfall of the winter on Sunday morning. For many, that was literally true, as thundersnow hit the area at around 6:30 a.m. The Met Office later confirmed the unusual phenomenon of a thunderstorm, but with snow instead of rain. In some places, around an inch fell at around dawn. People took to social media to talk about the loud bang heard across the county. One tweeted, "I heard a massive bang. Louder than I have ever heard before. I thought it was an explosion." The Met Office says of thunder snow, "When thunderstorms form in wintry conditions, they can sometimes give rise to heavy downpours of snow, which are often called thunder snow." People were quick to get the toboggans out for St Catherine's Hill and Oram's Arbour, but much of the snow had gone by late afternoon. And this article was accompanied by four lovely snow photographs, one of a wintry wood, another of the cathedral close and it's snowing, and a country scene near Winchester, and then of two youngsters making snow angels on the ground.
More evidence COVID-19 on retreat. Further evidence COVID-19 is on the retreat in Winchester. For the first time in weeks, no schools in the Winchester district on Tuesday had reported a case in the last 10 days. In the last week, the numbers of cases in the district since the start of the pandemic has risen from 3,954 to 4,201, an increase of 247, and lower than the previous week's 331 cases, writes Andrew Napier. 12 people were reported to have died, compared to 13 the week before. The number of deaths from the pandemic in the district is now 142, or 113.7 per 100,000 people. There are some relative hotspots where COVID is persisting and above the England average. Winchester East, Whiteley Knoll and Wickham, and Bishops Waltham and Waltham Chase. In Winchester East, which covers part of the city centre, Winnall, Highcliffe and Bar End, the rolling 7-day rate per 100,000 rose from 282 the Sunday before last to 405 on Tuesday, although down from 417 on Monday. In Winchester East, in the 7 days to Wednesday, January the 21st, there were 35 new cases, up 12, an increase of 57%. In Whiteley, Knoll and Wickham, the rolling rate January the 21st is 401. In the 7 days to January the 21st, there were 48 new cases, down 8, or 14%. In Bishops Waltham and Waltham Chase in the same period, there have been 28 cases, down 7, for a rolling 289, just above the England average. Overall, the rates in the Winchester district are falling so steeply that on the latest available figures, there are only 41 areas with a better record out of 315 areas. Across the whole district in the 7 days to January the 21st, there were 315 cases, down 49, or 13%, for a rolling rate of 252.3 per 100,000 people. The number of cases reported in Winchester District in the last 7 days to Tuesday, January the 26th, remains lower than in the previous week. There were only 27 new cases, taking to 247 the number for the last 7 days. The Winchester District covers more than just the city and covers a chunk of Hampshire from Micheldever to Denmead and Crawley to Ropley. Although new cases are falling across most of the district, the number of patients at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital remains high. On Monday, there were 100 at the RHCH, up from 82 last week. At North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke, there are 148, down from 152, and one at Andover War Memorial, down from 3. That means a total of 249 patients compared to 237 previously. Across the Hampshire County Council area in the last week, 240 deaths have been reported, taking the number from 1,515 to 1,755. In the area covered by the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, that includes the RHCH, 39 patients have died, with the toll rising from 313 to 352. The death toll in Portsmouth NHS is 679 and in Southampton 358.
New council tax reduction. Winchester Civic Chiefs have approved a new scheme for people to apply for a reduction in council tax. Residents across the district will now be able to register for the discount in a quicker and easier manner. The revised method also helps those receiving benefits. On average, a claimant's universal credit will change around 8 to 12 times a year. With the previous scheme, these changes would mean the claimant would have their council tax reduction recalculated every single time. Now, this is a thing of the past, says Councillor Neil Cutler, portfolio holder for finance, who has spearheaded the new method. He told a full council meeting, "Not only will our residents be able to claim promptly, the changes to the system will mean that the recalculations are unnecessary. This is a more consistent way of doing things. Our residents will know exactly what reduction they will be receiving. There will be the odd occasion that a change in universal credit will mean a change in banding, but this will be nothing compared to before. The continual changes will not impact reductions, and residents will also be able to backdate claims more easily." Members of the council approved the new scheme unanimously. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, senior Conservative councillor, told the council meeting at the Guildhall, "I welcome this new system with open arms. Winchester can rightly claim back the title of having the best council tax reduction scheme in the country."
New community food bank opens in Winall as coronavirus hits. A community food pantry will open its doors in Winall to give those who need it the freedom to shop, but with a little support. Elaine Chapman is behind the initiative that has been set up in the community space, Unit 12, with the help of Community Building Manager Jamie Robinson, encouraging families that need a little bit of support to manage and budget through these tough times. The service will put people in control of what they're getting, as they pay a £5 weekly membership and be able to choose around £15 worth of food each week. Elaine, who is also a coordinator of Mutual Aid Winchester, said, "The decision to set up the food pantry is because we're based in Winnall and not everyone wants to go or can get to the food bank. A lot of people don't necessarily want to go to the food bank, which is a shame because it has a stigma for most people in their minds. People can come in and choose items they want, rather than going to the food bank, getting a bag of items and saying, 'We've never eaten that.' The items that people are able to get will vary week to week, dependent on what is donated, but it includes fresh, frozen and general foods. Much of the food will be donated from Fair Share, and Elaine adds, 'We will have a weekly subscription with them, and they will donate what is available, and that is what will be on offer in the pantry.' She continued, 'This is a community-centred idea because we are run as a community and we help the community in keeping that focus on people who are desperately in need. Additional support services will be running alongside. What we are doing is building up a larger community rather than it just being about food. It is hoped that the food pantry will help with people's well-being and encourage socialising with the ambition of setting up training programmes.' Self-employed Elaine got involved with the food pantry and mutual aid when the first lockdown hit, which meant she lost all of her work. 'I'm really enjoying knowing that I can make people's lives easier and relieve the pressure from some people who need food but still want to keep their self-respect. It's about allowing people to be in charge of what they want. As well as the food pantry, Unit 12 has also set up a temporary food hub where they are putting boxes together and delivering them to whoever needs them as lockdown continues. To help with the food pantry, Winchester City Council has awarded a grant of £12,500 with a grant of the same value donated to a community food pantry set up in Wickham Community Centre in the Southern Parishes. And there's a nice big picture of Jamie Robinson and Elaine Chapman, socially distanced and in their masks, surrounded by trestle tables with boxes laden with groceries and all different sorts of things.
One last push for hospice fundraising. Campaigners are running a Valentine-themed fundraiser that could play a big part in getting Winchester Hospice to its appeal target. The appeal is now more than 90% of the way towards the £3.7 million needed to get it open in the summer. I Love Winchester Hospice will take place on February the 5th. If successful, the fundraising journey will then enter the next stage, as more than £450,000 needs to be raised through public donations every year to help Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust run the hospice. Ambassador Mike Bridge said, "As an integral part of the event, we will be running a virtual online auction with some fantastic lots on offer. The auction will be open during the week before and will close on the night of the event. We can promise participants a fun and entertaining evening. We are delighted to have CBS radio and TV broadcaster Liam Mayclem as our host for the night, and there will be a mocktail cocktail and Valentine breakfast making session with a Michelin star chef. We will also have musical interludes. People can attend from anywhere as long as they have access to an internet connection and are on Zoom. We want people to have a great time while also helping to raise a significant amount of money for the Winchester Hospice Big Push campaign to get the building open in summer 2021. I Love Winchester Hospice will be streamed live from 7pm to 8pm, and Mike and fellow ambassadors and supporters have already contributed prizes. A trip to San Francisco, a bottle of champagne signed by Prime Minister Boris Johnson, a signed and framed Take That prize, and a tennis racket signed by three-time Wimbledon champion Boris Becker. Just a few of the lots that will be up for auction. And if you want to know more, visit www.charityauction.bid/love to register. That's www.charityauction.bid/love. And that article is accompanied by a photograph that shows Sue Hall, Maureen Chisnell and Ronnie Davis from the Inner Wheel Club of Winchester presenting a £2,500 cheque to Mark Jones from the Winchester Hospice fundraising appeal.
Glastonbury demise casts shadow locally. Glastonbury Festival 2021 will not take place, prompting concern for other events like Boomtown. In a social media statement, Glastonbury organisers Michael and Ellen Lee Evis said, "With great regret, we must announce that this year's Glastonbury Festival will not take place, and this will be another enforced fallow year for us. Tickets for this year will roll over to next year." Boomtown Festival is currently scheduled to take place on the Matterley Estate near Winchester between August the 11th and 15th. It comes after a Boomtown organiser previously said it is unlikely many festivals would be able to survive if they did not go ahead in 2021. Anna Wade, Communications and Strategy Director of Boomtown Fair, said the consequences of festivals not going ahead in 2021 would be pretty grave for the wider industry. She said, "The consequences, I think it's fair to say, are pretty grave. Most events or festivals, it is unlikely that we would be able to weather the storms of events not happening in 2021. Most event organisers have only one event. We are an independent festival. That's only one opportunity a year. That's our product. That's what we do. Without that, we don't have a company, essentially." Boomtown has been contacted for a comment, but it has yet to respond. In other media, Ms. Wade said Boomtown was much smaller than Glastonbury and so could be more flexible as to a date when a crunch decision had been made.
Group shares sporting memories. To pass the time during lockdown, Malcolm Clark, who writes Winchester FC match reports for this newspaper, has been doing some research for a sporting memories group. The group aims at helping people with dementia, depression and loneliness by sharing memories of sporting moments and tapping into a passion for sport. This, it says, enables people to connect with others and with their past, reawakening positive thoughts and feelings that otherwise remain hidden away. The topics for discussion on a weekly basis are determined by the Sporting Memories Foundation. Malcolm writes, "Dementia among footballers has been very much in the news recently, with Bobby Charlton recently becoming the fifth player from the England World Cup winning team of 1966 to suffer in this way. The family of Jeff Astle have also set up a foundation in memory of the former footballer who died from a degenerative brain disease, having been a frequent header of heavy leather footballs during his career." One item research that is of local interest is the fact that two former Winchester College students have captained international cricket teams. And these are Douglas Jardine and the Nawaba Patordi Jr. Jardine captained England in 15 of his 22 tests, but is best known for captaining England on the famous Bodyline series in Australia in 1932-33. Bodyline, also known as fast leg theory bowling, was done in an attempt to reduce the effectiveness of Australia's Don Bradman, who had been very prolific for his country on English soil. Nawaba Patordi Jr. is one of India's most famous cricketers, and he captained his country in 40 of 46 tests, first becoming skipper at the age of 21 years and 77 days, which at the time was a record. He captained the 1967 side in England, and in the first test of the 1967 series hit a century and a 50, which was also the test match in which Jeff Boycott scored a double century and was dropped for the next match due to slow scoring. Remarkably, Pataudy virtually lost sight of one of his eyes in a car crash in 1961, and he also played in England for Sussex. Nwaba Pataudy Jr. broke Jardine's record of most runs scored in a season at Winchester College, which was set in 1919. His father, Nwan Pataudy Sr., played Test cricket for both England and India.
Theatre and St John's strike deal. Two Winchester charities are set to expand after drawing up an agreement. St John's, which runs almshouses and a care home in the city, will now forge ahead with its plans to maximise potential housing for elderly locals. The charity had also proposed for many years to develop additional almshouses on Chesil Street, but it has instead sold some of the land to Winchester Dramatic Society, WDS, which looks to extend the Chesil Theatre. WDS trustee David Small said, "The Society established the Chesil Theatre in 1966, though we have been entertaining the people of Winchester since 1863. In addition to our annual programme of six main productions, we have increased our activities with sessions for two youth groups, drama workshops and training, student performances, and regular use of our intimate auditorium for small-scale professional productions. However, over the years our building has begun to bulge at the seams, putting pressure on our ability to carry out all the arts-related objectives we'd like. Working alongside St John's, it is now possible for us to create a new annex. This will provide disabled amenities, adequate dressing room facilities, a new foyer and rehearsal space, and a performance community room. In a separate deal, three Victorian houses on Chesil Street have been sold and will be restored." Roger Bright, Chairman of Trustees at St John's Winchester, added, "St John's is delighted to be facilitating this expansion of the Chesil's facilities through the sale of part of its Chesil site. The theatre has a proud history and we look forward to seeing the annex completed and all the community benefits that will bring. As a charity, we have great respect for the charitable and community-focused activities of the Chesil Theatre and are pleased we have reached a mutually beneficial agreement. We continue to support WDS with the building of their annex in order to enhance significantly the current theatre. Preparatory works at St John's Colebrook Street site are expected to begin in March. This development will see 15 new almshouses comprising a state-of-the-art block of fully adapted apartments to allow older people to live independently for as long as possible. The new and older almshouses will be integrated with the existing Southside almshouses and will sit in a landscaped area." Mr. Bright added, "We are at a very exciting stage of the charity's growth. We have much work to do and are determined to forge ahead with our plans to develop our services to benefit more local older people, including those of limited means. We intend to build success of our hand-in-hand community outreach and social prescribing service, which has operated throughout the COVID-19 crisis." Clive Cook, Chief Executive, added, "St John's has a long history of over nine centuries, and the new units on Colebrook Street will ensure that we can continue to support older people in the community in a sustainable way. The Colebrook Street site will allow the St John's community to endure and flourish in the city within a modern setting."
A pigeon was in the right spot when it got trapped in a closed-up shopping centre in Winchester, writes Andrew Napier. Somehow, the bird got into the Waterstones branch in the Brook shopping centre. All the shops in the centre are currently closed because of the lockdown. Luckily, it chose to rest in the large window overlooking Middle Brook Street and was spotted by passers-by who alerted the centre and the shop. Mark Rowe of Tapling's Close Week saw the bird and took a photograph, which is attached to the article. There's been a happy ending. The bird was located by centre staff and released safe and well. A spokeswoman for Waterstones said the pigeon was safely rescued. Luckily, no damage was incurred. And there's two pictures, the pigeon underneath the Waterstones sign and the picture of it being rescued in little white cloth.
Lockdown party. Four Winchester women have been fined following a party during lockdown. Officers were called to a property in Wales Street, Winnall, on Saturday, January the 23rd. The women, who have not been named, have been reported for summons. A Hampshire Police spokesperson said officers were called just before 9 p.m. on Saturday, January the 23rd, to an address on Wales Street in Winnall after reports of a party. As a result, four women, all from Winchester, have been reported for summons in relation to a fixed penalty notice. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Liz LaGrease is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 861 229. And thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. To our editors, Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. And of course, many thanks to our reader, Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns. Thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and stay safe. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet. Place the correct address label on the front of the wallet and return it as soon as possible. Thank you. And goodbye again.